Jamie and Locker with you in the Green Zone on this Tuesday afternoon. As we remember Ozzy Osbourne, the news came from his family today that the rock icon has passed away at the age of 76. Any requests for Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, you can send them in 1-877-332-8255. Well, today, about 24 or more teams at Veterans Report for NFL training camps. That means 30 of 32 teams have all reported, good to go, two more tomorrow, and then it's all set for the NFL training camp season well underway. And we continue our preview series with a look-see at the Cleveland Browns. And Kelsey Russo is joining us from Cleveland Browns, clevelandbrowns.com. Kelsey, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to chat with you guys.
So you're an Ohio native. Do you have a lot of Cleveland Browns fans in your family or no?
It's actually kind of funny. So, yes, I am from here, but my whole family is from New York. Not a ton of fans in the family. And then we grew up, my dad and my brothers were all Panthers fans until I started here. Now they've become Browns fans. They've come around the past couple of years.
Oh, okay, because I was like, if you're from Ohio and you have some Brown fans, that
I know, record your family dinners.
I can imagine the questions you would have gotten at family dinners.
They are very interesting, I will tell you that.
So it is very interesting, especially when you look at the QB room with Deshaun Watson now out of it, rehabbing the Achilles injury again. But they draft Dylan Gabriel. They draft Shedeur Sanders. They bring in Kenny Pickett. Oh, yeah, Joe Flacco. That's pretty well the story of the Cleveland Browns training camp, isn't it, Kelsey, on who gets the reps and who is number one in September?
Yes, this will be the really big story that we follow over the course of camp. You know, and honestly, it started back during, you know, OTAs and mini camp. You know, there is going to be a true quarterback competition. They're using all of this time to really evaluate all four quarterbacks in, you know, the different stages that they're in. You know, you mentioned Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders. They're monitoring the way that they're coming along, learning this offense, getting used to the NFL, and really adapting to this style of play in their offense that they've created. You know, they're monitoring how Kenny Pickett is adapting because they brought him in an acquisition. They signed Joe Flacco, who's been here. You know, he was here in 2023, but, you know, back in a new offense. And so this is really going to be just an interesting competition throughout camp to as they evaluate their decision-making, their play on the field, just how they mesh with the offense, et cetera, to then when they make a decision before week one, who is going to be that starting quarterback.
So, Kelsey, Jamie just mentioned it, that Deshaun Watson is rehabbing the second Achilles surgery, but we've sort of heard rumors that he's kind of kicking around. Do you have a sense of what his role is in that very busy quarterback room?
Yeah, so he's still around. He's been in the quarterback room. I think, you know, he's during when they were here for OTAs and minicamp was in those meetings with those guys and is just kind of serving as someone to bounce questions off of, you know, as just another voice in that locker room. And with especially just bringing in two rookies like that, he's just another person that they can really ask questions to, learn from, and really just be, you know, a voice in that space. So I think that's really his role as he's continuing to rehab and just kind of really, you know, taking on that role as just a voice.
As we're joined by Kelsey Russo, associate editor, staff writer for the Cleveland Browns, as it is an interesting, one of the biggest stories is watching this QB room shuffle, especially with two, you know, highly, Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders were two highly looked at quarterback prospects drafted by the same team. How do they prevent it from becoming Gabriel versus Sanders, right, going forward? And having these two young men both trying to prove themselves and try to do it for the team rather than pitting them against each other like it happened on draft day. Well, this is definitely going to be a fight between Gabriel and Sanders, and because it can get complex with the egos of professional football players.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think they've really tried that from the beginning when they brought them in. They talked about how this is going to be a true competition, and now that there's four of them and they're nobody's getting a leg up just because of where they were drafted, their veteran status, et cetera. Like, it is a true competition, and I think that's how they keep it from them pitting against one another, because, you know, they're all working towards that goal of trying to earn that spot. But I think it's also been interesting, and all four of them have talked about it, you know, during OTAs and minicamps, how while, yes, there is a competition going on, there's also support for one another. And I think that really makes up the depth of this quarterback room of, I mean, they're all competitors. That's who these guys are. That's how you have to be as a professional athlete. But they support one another in this process to want to do the best for the Browns. And then so whoever takes that role, it has been deemed as best fit for that. But they all need know that they need to be ready in case something happens, in case they need to step in and you play a game, in case they step up into a different role. And so I think that's the mentality that keeps this pitting against one another, rather working against or working with each other in this process to then eventually, you know, have a starter named.
So, Kelsey, where is everyone putting Shadur on the depth chart? Is he third? Is he fourth?
It's a great question. There isn't a true depth chart yet, which I know is obviously not the answer a lot of people want, but I truly do think, like, we're not at that stage yet where they're making a depth chart. Like, as they did during OTAs and minicamp, and is the plan for training camp as well, like, all those guys are going to get reps, and they've been doing more two-spot drills where, you know, Shador and Dylan are taking reps at the same time and one on one field, and, you know, Joe and Kenny are taking reps together on a second field. There's some drills where just Dylan takes reps or just Shador takes reps. They kind of are splitting it up like that, so it's well-rounded and everybody is getting those reps so that they can use that film in this evaluation process. So I think we're still a little early for that depth chart, but, you know, training camp is going to be that this opportune time where we start to see that develop, where we see it to kind of play out, and we'll see kind of how that develops over the course of the next few weeks.
Has there been a Deion Sanders sighting yet for Cleveland Browns minicamps?
Must be a gong show.
Well, when they draft him, that's the question right away.
Is Deion
going to be hanging around?
So that's a very, very fair question. I have not seen him yet. But I wouldn't be surprised. No, I'm sure at some point he'll make his way out here to come visit. But I personally have not seen him during OTAs and minicamps. Or around the building. So not yet, but, you know, I'm sure it's to come at some point. You know, obviously he's very supportive of his son and everything, so I'm sure we'll have a sighting here soon enough.
But, well, honestly,
he's playing pickleball at the ranch.
Well, if my kid was at a first training camp, I'd probably show up to watch. So give him grace on that one. The Browns lately have been a wild ride, right? 11 wins. A slump, missed the playoffs, 11 wins, comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, Myles Garrett, defensive player of the year, and then down to three. Where are we going here with the Cleveland Browns in 2025?
Very fair question. You know, I really do believe, and I think this is the sentiment around the coaching staff and the players, is they believe that, you know, last year is what it is, and realize that they did not live up to the standard that they know they can. And so they need to be better, and they believe that they will be better this year in 2025, which you have to after only three wins. There's not really that far we can go past that. But, you know, there is a sense that defensively they know they can be better defensively. They know in 2023 they led the league in so many categories, and they did not do that last year. And so they know areas that they have to improve. They have to force turnovers, those interceptions. They have to, you know, their third down percentage has to improve. Offensively, you know, they made some changes in the offseason, and they brought in Tommy Rees. They've kind of revamped this offense, which you're still working through, obviously, as you're figuring out who is going to be your starting quarterback. But they've rebuilt this offense that they believe is going to have more success. And so I think we can really expect, you know, a big jump this year. Not that I have, you know, a number in mind, per se, for total wins, but just in the sense that as a collective team, offense, defense, special teams, they are going to be better because they know they have to be. And it's the sentiment around the team that they believe that this is the year that they can really make a jump back to, you know, back to 2023. You know, they have that in mind of just being back at the top of the league and really showcasing who they actually are and put last year behind them.
You know what's wild about our conversation right now, Kelsey, is that we're just about done and we're just bringing up Nick Chubb and who's going to replace him. I mean, that's how crazy this quarterback situation is in Cleveland, that we didn't even get to that question until the end here. Have you got any sense of what's going on there?
Not totally yet. So this is also going to be one of the big topics of camp, I believe. You know that room now consists of Jerome Ford, Dylan Sampson, Pierre Strong. Like, those are your guys in this moment. And so we're going to see kind of how this plays out and, you know, how they use those guys in the run game. And, you know, they struggled last year in the run game for a lot of different factors. You know, I think the offensive line, like, there was a lot of issues that led to the lack of success in the run game. But, you know, this is an opportunity for a young guy like Dylan, who had a lot of success in college, you know, to make a statement for himself and to find his role. Jerome Ford is going to continue to step into that larger role that he did when Nick wasn't there last year before he came back from his injury and after his injury in 2023. So this is just like another opportunity for Jerome to continue to take those steps forward that he's shown signs he can do. I just think he needs even more reps and that kind of that rhythm and consistency in that specific role. So it is going to be like one of the big topics of camp, of just how this room shakes out, how they build out the run game in this new style of offense, and the success that they have been on the field.
Sorry, Kelsey, but from an official team's perspective, has Kevin made an official statement about Quinshon and how they're handling that, or is it just away from the team until his legal stuff is taken care of?
Yeah, that's where it's at right now, away from the team until it's handled. We haven't spoken or heard from Kevin just yet. We will tomorrow, but that's the sentiment right now, is away from the team while they handle the legal aspect of things.
How many lawyers do the Cleveland Browns have?
It's a great question. I don't actually know, but I'm sure they have a room full of them.
I know. Is it busier than the quarterback room?
What is amazing in the National Football League, I know somebody who knows somebody who works in the legal department of an NFL team or security department. The amount of like former police chiefs and police officers employed by NFL teams, it is like, that was the part of the NFL business I did not know about until a few years ago. It blew my mind. But I do need some Cleveland tourist advice. If I go to a game, should I sit in the dog pound or no?
Oh, absolutely. Not even a question. I mean, it is rowdy. I will warn you of that. But it is, if you're going to come and experience the game, that is where to do it. It is. They are truly some of the craziest fans, but they are so passionate and so fun. You will have the best time cheering and just witnessing an NFL game in the dog pound. You will see some crazy stuff, but they're a good time, so I would definitely suggest that.
Should go as a cat, dress up as a cat.
No, I don't think so. And I'm not wearing opposing team colors, that's for sure. That is not that's not going to happen. Kelsey, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy camp.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Kelsey.
That is Kelsey Russo from Cleveland Browns. ClevelandBrowns.com is their senior staff writer as they get set for what is going to be a lot of people are going to be there in Cleveland following this camp. With everything going on.
I wonder if it'll be as busy as the Steelers camp.
It's a great question.
It might be.
It's going to be a popular spot for national reporters to show up for sure. Like, we had the Pittsburgh reporter yesterday from The Athletic, who said their national reporters are already like telling them when they're coming and doing that. I bet you the same thing's going on in Cleveland.
Yeah.
There's national guys coming in this day to talk to Shedeur Sanders. And then if Deion shows up.
Well, then it's a gong show.
Full gong show.
Complete gong show.
Just going to watch his kid. It's fine. Just like any other dad. We continue here on the Green Zone on 980 CJME and 650 CKO.
Underneath the war, pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sins.
We're taking your requests to honor the life of Ozzy Osbourne. As we found out earlier today, as his family posted, he was surrounded by loved ones as he died at the age of 76, one of the rock icons in music history.
To say the least. Art wanted that one. Or picks.
1-877-332-8255 is the fan line to send in your requests. If there's an Ozzy song, Black Sabbath song you'd like to hear on this Tuesday. Well, it was pretty cool to be able to turn on the NFL Network or ESPN or DAZN or anything else and watch a couple of Saskatchewan athletes sling it at the World Flag Football Championships. And the head coach of that team and director of football Saskatchewan, Mike Thomas, joins us once again here on the Green Zone. Mike, I know you would have rather it with the championship, but congratulations on a semifinal appearance at the World Championships with your crew.
Yeah, you know, definitely you hit the nail on the head there. Definitely would have wanted to return back home with a championship trophy coming on that AC flight with the boys, but unfortunately that wasn't the case. Nonetheless, super proud of the way that we represented our country, our province, our city, our league, and just ensured that those that were in attendance or were surrounded by our team definitely knew, you know, the Canadian way, and was just super proud of their efforts and, you know, just gutted, obviously, that, you know, we couldn't pull things out, but was definitely happy that we were able to perform on that stage on live TV and in front of all those fans that were present at the event.
So it was a U14 flag football tournament in Canton, like Jamie was saying. Can you give us a rough idea of, like, I don't know, how do you explain the level of competition that you were up against?
Yeah, you know what? It was like you could kind of see there are some countries that are really good right now. You know, the top countries I would have to say would be, obviously, when you look at the stands, would be the top four countries were Canada, Mexico, Australia, and China. You know, not to discredit the other countries that were there. However, they still have a ways to go, and you can tell that they're building, but they're just not quite there at that level yet. You know, Germany, Great Britain, Brazil, and Puerto Rico. And so, you know, the difference between those countries really just comes down to play. And when you look at the ones that I mentioned at the top that were the better countries, it came down to, you know, having some very good athletes, different styles of play than what we're kind of used to, say from what we see here in Canada and even going up against Mexico, they definitely play a different style, more of that, IFAF international play, but, it was still neat and a great opportunity to kind of put our kids up against those countries, stack them up player for player, scheme for scheme. And you know what? While we weren't victorious and we did lose to Mexico, although we beat them in the round robin play, you know, I know if we would have got to the final, we would have played Australia or China, that it would have been a win. There's just not even a question. You know, and it was interesting because there was a lot of people that were there for our games, and it was Canada against the world. And, you know, I think if you speak with any one of the parents that were there, and it was very weird because, as you know, Canadians mostly known on the international scene are, you know, easygoing, likable, those sorts of things. And we never conducted ourselves in a manner that would elicit that type of, you know, feeling for anyone to think any different. However, I just think that, you know, a lot of them, especially the Americans that were, you know, kind of watching and cheering, didn't want to see us win. Which is okay. That's fine. And our kids.
They're just bitter yeah. That the men's team beat the American side at that flag football championship.
I'm okay with this,
that's
Mike.
That's Pat McAfee's influence. That's that is, I think.
Yeah. Thank you for telling us that, Mike. Yeah. I don't mind hearing that at all. Nice.
Yeah.
This is a massive event, right? Because you have the international tournament going on side with the U.S. tournament, correct? Is it all in like one huge area, or was it in different areas of the city?
No, it was all in one space. So when you come down to Canton, Ohio, and you go to where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is and Tom Benson Stadium, and if you're a football aficionado, definitely go. Just kind of putting that plug out there for anyone. The space that we walked down towards where their fields are is they had essentially six field turf fields that were there, which then got chopped up Now, they did have two main fields, which was the one, the ESPN field. So any games on there were being fed live on the feed or through NFL Network or Disney Plus. And then they had the digital field, which was ones that were being shown on ESPN on YouTube, which was where our game is on, if for those that would like to see it. And then also on the other digital platforms, TSN Plus, I think, picked it up there as well as some of the Disney Plus, as well as I think one of the other networks was there as well. So, and then the other ones were just open. So, you know, it was definitely, you know, you have the 8U, 10U, 12U, 14U, the international, the girls. So there's a lot going on there, plus the activations, whether it be through Toyota, Oakley, Downey, the NFL teams that were there, the food trucks, the DJ stage, the, you know, the player HQ. Like, it was neat, you know, and these kids got a true sense of what it's like to be treated like a pro. Like, we had, you know, kids could go out there and they had two barber chairs, you know, they can get their hair cut, you know, girls could get their hair did with, you know, the braids and whatnot. You know, they had it all. Like, it was definitely something that I think our kids really appreciated, and met some new kids and fostered some new relationships and got to play some high-level ball at the same time.
Can you do me a favor, Mike? Can you, if you get a minute in the next couple of days, can you tweet that out? And we'll send,
yeah,
so it's @9 Mike Thomas. And then we'll be able to check out the Canadian games, just in case somebody has trouble tracking that down. I have another question. There's a kid that's getting a lot of attention. Bryson Wright.
Yeah.
The viral one-handed catch. Like, he got moss type. This kid's 14. He's got 30 Div 1.
He's not like 14. He's 22.
Yeah. He looks like it.
Yeah. My goodness. Did you take the kids to watch one of, because he was playing with Jacksonville, the Jacksonville team? Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you take the kids to see him?
Yeah, so Bryson was playing on the ESPN field right after we were done playing Mexico. And so we were just kind of, you know, licking our wounds and whatnot, and kind of, you know, boys were starting to settle down and stuff. Because obviously after a game like that, with the intensity of the fans and the heat and everything else, it was a lot. So anyways, after it was all said and done, you know, everybody's kind of like, hey, let's go check out, you know, Bryson's game. And it was a full field. So, of course, you're trying to find a stitch of space where you could kind of maybe see something on the field or whatnot. But we caught it late, obviously, because, you know, their game had started after ours and whatever. But while we didn't see the one-handed catch that he had made the day before, we were there to see their semifinal win over the Giants. And he is as advertised. He is legit. He is a very large player. You know, in terms of size and just even persona. But it's never on a bad way, because, you know, like after the game was done, you know, he went and did a nice backflip for a big guy, like 6'4", probably 2-something, I'm going to guess, maybe 190 or whatever.
Yeah, 14.
Yeah, 14.
It's like a normal 14-year-old.
Yeah, in comparison, there was, you know, China had a 6'6 player, was probably about 180 pounds. So, you know, that kind of was another one. But Bryson's obviously got, you know, the social buzz around him. And so after the game was done, I think you would have probably saw on some of the social posts where there was a bunch of kids, like, I mean, 80 so some odd kids that were there trying to get his autograph. You'll see two Canadian kids in the corner that were trying to get there too, which is my son and his bestie there. We're trying to get in. And the other part too, so Bryson, we're in the players' lounge, so coaches and players could go in there. And we were leaving, getting ready to go to our game, and he was walking in with you know, the rest of the guys from the Jags team. And he dapped up of a couple of our boys, and as we're walking to the field, like, oh my God, Bryson Wright just did this, did that. And I'm like, hey, like, we got to get ready for a game. And, you know, as we're walking, I could still hear them talking about it, right? So you got some other boys that were fanboying it up, right? And they're playing against them, or they're, you know, just kind of walking by him. But he was never one that was, you know, not approachable. He was definitely, you know,
pretty cool.
Good. And so was his teammates as well. So, you know, kudos to him. Kudos to the Jag squad that won. And just, you know, it was a really good time down in Canton for everybody this past weekend.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, to get it, Bryson Wright, you might as well just jot that name down. Yeah. He's got hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers. This kid's 14.
He is a disgusting athlete.
Like he, it like is.
It's gross.
And,
like,
and so he's going over guys, and he was. And there's another player, I forget his name, on Jacksonville too. They are already getting Div 1 offers. They're already signing. He's already signed a nil deal, a name, image, likeness deal with a trading card company. Like this is, and he's 14. Like this is Bryson Wright is a name, and he was down there. He can watch those games too. My son and I watched two of the Jacksonville games, over the weekend, as well as the Canadian games that we could find on DAZN and stuff like that. But I do want to talk about the exposure for the sport. Like your kids, these kids from like Regina Moose Jaw, their highlights were being shown on the NFL's main Twitter account.
Yeah.
Like Canada, touchdown pass,
yeah.
NFL Network, ESPN, DAZN. How huge is this for the exposure of the sport, especially at the youth level, where a kid can turn it on and go, I want to do that?
Yeah, it is something that you don't really recognize until the moment has occurred or shortly thereafter. And I think that's where we are right now. You know, the great part is that the sport is being given such a platform due to the addition to the 2028 Olympics in LA. The NFL is 100% behind it, obviously, as you just mentioned, with, you know, highlights being on not only ESPN, but being shown on NFL Network. And, you know, we all got home yesterday evening and, you know, kind of sitting around watching TV and look on the guide and what's on there. NFL Network is the flag championships and games. So, you know, that and putting it in such a limelight with the spotlight that the NFL has will transcend into just natural components of play and just exposure beyond measurable amounts in the right now. Maybe in the future, obviously, they'll be able to know just off of increased registrations and stuff. When we look at it from our own perspective here in Regina, we've got a great, great following, obviously, here in our city with the numbers that we do have, being the biggest program in the entire country, and not just per capita, just in the entire country. We have the single largest league. What it is doing is it's allowing us to be able to showcase the game from our country standpoint, how Canada is doing at this event. As you mentioned earlier, you know, with Lapo and the team, the senior men's team going undefeated, you know, that's huge. The ladies going 4-1 or 3-1. So right now we're on a big wave on the up trajectory when they look and they see Canada and they see success and they see it being posted on the NFL page. On, you know, obviously we've had plays that were ripped from our game that were being posted to other social channels for play designs and defensive calls. And like, so that just shows that we are on the same level as one of the big powerhouses in the game. So, you know, with that being said, what that means from a grassroots aspect is that, like you said, a kid will turn on the TV and say, like, I want to do that. But then a kid in our province will be like, hey, if a team from Regina can be there, like, we can be there too. And that is absolutely true. I don't discredit it for one moment that there will not be another team from our province go. There's going to be. It's just a matter of when. We've got great leagues and operators across the province doing things, getting things going, being involved in football altogether. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is just going to be the start. And I'm glad that we were able to be that group, whether it be a poster child or whatever, because, you know, I think that those kids from, you know, the Jaw and just from here in our city did a great, great job of showcasing, you know, what we can do on that stage, and super proud of them and super appreciative of the families for coming along on this trip as well.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, we have had Stuart Johnston, the new commissioner of the CFL, on a couple of times, and both times that we've had him on, we've had flag conversations. Well, I don't think you did when you had the smoke conversation, but
no.
But we've had flag conversations with him, and he seems wildly open to the idea that the CFL needs to find a way to shoehorn their way into the success of flag, and the NFL is way ahead of him. Do you see an opportunity for the CFL here?
I would definitely say so.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, there is a way, of course, to be able to manage and be able to coexist with what NFL flag is doing, not already here in our country and obviously globally as well, but the CFL has an opportunity to really be a part of this. Now, of course, with anything, there's going to be an investment, which is sometimes a difficult thing, I would say, from the CFL's aspect, just due to their financial situation. But if they are truly serious, and I know they are, and I know the conversations that are going on between the CFL and Football Canada right now, which then kind of translates to coming down the pipeline with the PSOs, the Provincial Sport Organizations, to use an acronym if some people don't know, that there is going to be a trickle-down effect. It would be great if there would be a way to have the CFL's league teams be integrated similarly to like how the NFL is currently situated with the NFL flight program. This used to be a case, and I won't go into politics in this case, but the CFL used to be involved in this program, and they stepped back. So I'll leave it at that. But with that being said, they can for sure return and be prominent in a lot of ways to the level that this is going in the NFL. The one thing I will say is that here in our hometown with the Riders, they are a huge supporter of our program. Although it is an NFL branded program, we work collaboratively with them. Craig Reynolds with the team and Cindy Fuchs with the foundation and their team, we work hand in hand. So, that's something where there are opportunities to coexist. And even down in Canton, because of obviously some of the things that I've done with the league, I had an opportunity to meet with Troy Vincent. Obviously, if people don't know who that is, he is one of the bigwigs within the NFL head office, as well as another gentleman by the name of Jeff. I wish I could remember his last name right now. It was super long. I was trying to read it on his credentials. And we were discussing this at length in regards to the growth of the game, the development, the future. What are some of the new initiatives that we're doing? That is there a way for us to be able to still be a part of other avenues that they're doing from a Canadian sense to join in from an international presence? So they are looking for that. So, I sure hope that the conversation I had with, Izel, who's the head of RCX, Troy Vincent, and the other gentleman from the NFL, that it is a conversation that then potentially includes Stuart Johnston and those people from the CFL office to have a way to be able to do something, or NFL Canada's office, because there is this linkage that is there. That's a possibility. And it's a shame that the CFL doesn't have a true sense in it yet, but they're coming, and I know they will, and you'd want to make sure they can try to strike while the iron is hot, as opposed to being late to the party and when everybody's, kind of walking out that they're just now walking in.
Well, Mike, very much appreciate your time as always, and congratulations to you and the gang representing Canada and Saskatchewan, Regina Moose Jaw, so well at the World Championships.
Much appreciated, guys. Thank you very much. And I just want to thank you. Thank everybody back here in our city, in Regina and Moose Jaw, and all of, obviously within the province that supported the team. It meant a lot. The boys were super excited to have these opportunities to speak to different radio people and on TV. So I thank you guys. I thank the media all together, and we're glad and we're proud to have represented our province and our country appropriately. And we're thankful for this opportunity, and thanks for you guys for having me on here today.
Right on. That is Mike Thomas, head coach of Team Canada, represented well. You can still find those games, ESPN, YouTube, and all that stuff from the Flag World Championships. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.